2024 presidential race is heating up ever so slightly as the GOP primary field continues to thin out. No pun intended. Chris Christie has ended his presidential campaign, and the polling seems to indicate most of his supporters prefer Haley to anyone else running. So, Micah, do we think Christie dropping out will affect the outcome of this primary at all? Or will it have actually basically no effect at all in terms of the outcome?
I think you should pull up the poll numbers. I mean, like, Trump's going to curb stomp in Iowa almost certainly. In New Hampshire, you know, it's made Nikki Haley winning like a, you know, complete, really like zero chance possibility to having some chance. But then she's going to go on and lose in South Carolina. And whenever you lose your home state, you're basically done for. You're out for the count. So I don't see, like, look at South Carolina's polls. I mean, he's at 53%. She's at, what is she at?
She's like 20 or something, right?
She's like 25. Like, this is awful.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing, though. Like, is there a chance that she has a stronger than expected performance in Iowa? She wins New Hampshire, and then maybe the momentum is on her side. You know, maybe she, I don't know, squeaks out a victory in South Carolina. Like, what are the odds, Micah? Is she going to go on a run?
So you get, like, pretty much blown out. There's no way she doesn't get blown out in Iowa. And that's the bigger of the two states. Then you go to New Hampshire, and maybe you slightly win. Like, just slightly. And somehow, I guess the media will be so biased that you get, like, 26 points up in the next state.
That's the thing. Like, I think that the 2024 race, it's a good thing to mention, but the narrative is still structurally very similar to what it once was, right? And with Ron DeSantis, especially, like, the 538 has their own podcast, which I listen to, like, every single episode of, and they talk about how, you know, it's not unreasonable to expect DeSantis to drop out probably before South Carolina, like, because he's at this point, the momentum in terms of second place, the momentum is on Haley's side. Like, is Ron DeSantis really about to come in like third or fourth place in the first four primary states and just completely embarrass himself? Or is he maybe just going to drop out after Iowa and like save face, endorse Trump?
I think he's going to drop out after Iowa, because I mean, he was endorsed by the governor there. It looks like Haley might actually do better than him. Which
he wasn't just endorsed,
like,
by the governor. If you look at the state House and state Senate endorsements, like 2/3 of the state House and Senate have endorsed DeSantis as well. And his spending patterns, he's basically all in on Iowa. Like, he hasn't even barely visited New Hampshire. He's polling in, I think, like third or fourth place even in New Hampshire, depending on the poll. And it's not looking good for him in these next few states. So I think it would make sense, both from just a like long-term planning perspective, but also a resource perspective. Like, he spent millions and millions of dollars in Iowa, and he's pulling at third place right now, right? And so it wouldn't really be practical for him to continue the race potentially in the future. And that's the thing, like, the polls of DeSantis supporters seem to prefer Trump, right? And so, he's obviously polling much higher than like Christie is when he dropped out. So you take that 12-15% that DeSantis is polling and disproportionately give it to Haley or give it to Trump, and then all of a sudden you're probably in a even more sorry state if you're the Haley
campaign. Yeah, I think that, you know, people want a competitive Republican primary story. I think a lot of journalists were expecting that to be the news cycle, and so they wrote the stories anyway, even though there was always, you know, ever since the primary season took off, it was very clear what the outcome was going to be.
Well, I mean, it's to the point that a lot of the coverage is basically just on the second place people. It's like, oh, the Haley campaign, the DeSantis campaign, Chris, and it's just like, guys, all these people are polling. It's like when you have a graph and it's like a logarithmic scale. It's like, guys, the actual scale of this is Trump is up by 50 points, and it's really not a huge probability of any of these guys winning. The thing, though, it's not just that they're not going to win. Like, all these people are probably going to be ostracized, right? Like, do you imagine that, like, people are speculating, oh, like, what if Haley becomes VP or whatever? And it's like, but Trump's not going to pick Haley as VP. That'd be shocking, right?
But he already picked his VP.
What?
Yeah, people are saying, I think it's supposed to be Lee Zeldin. That's what people are saying.
I read that he was one of the people being vetted, but not that it was like official. It's actually he's like 100% Lee Zeldin.
Trump
of all
said
people.
He's already picked his VP and can't tell you. Okay.
All right. Well,
that's hilarious.
Maybe it is Lee Zeldin then. That's an interesting choice if it is. I mean, Lee Zeldin, for those that don't know, he ran like a marginally competitive race for governor of New York, and he was a member of the U.S. House. He was an election denier, if I remember correctly, challenged the results of the election, so he's pretty fucking crazy. But, you know, I guess did pretty well in New York. I mean, I don't know. It seemed like all the coverage coming out of the Trump campaign was that he was going to pick a woman for his VP. But
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that were talking about Kristi Noem.
Kristi Noem, Carrie Lake, MTG, Elise Stefanik, like these guys were, you know, that was kind of the main list.
To pick Carrie Lake, because I mean, she's running for Senate in a very competitive Senate seat. So
well,
I don't imagine
make sense normally, Micah.
I don't think he would choose Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't think he would choose Tim Scott. I think Nikki Haley's already been ruled out. I think Kristi Noem is a solid chance. I don't understand where the Lee Zeldin thing came from, but I know a lot of people have been saying that. So, I mean, Kristi Noem's the fine choice. People say Tucker Carlson. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, first of all, it's a terrible electability play. But, like, Tucker Carlson has literally sent out texts that were, like, hating on Trump, talking about how insufferable Trump is.
Yeah.
And he has such a big personality. I don't think Trump would ever want to share the stage with somebody that could have a personality as big as him and have a cult of personality that's, you know, potentially competitive with his.
I think Tucker Carlson, the speculation on that is like probably at one point there was a list with just like anybody somebody could think of, and Tucker Carlson was probably on that list, right? But there's not really a realistic chance of him getting picked, obviously. Lee Zeldin is a very unexpected pick if that ends up actually being the pick. I mean, I guess to some degree, Mike Pence was an unexpected pick, right? Kind of who knows the governor of Indiana at any given time, right? So,
I mean, Trump says he's making a play for like Minnesota. His campaign is launching operations in like deep blue states, which is like obviously ridiculous.
You know, he almost won Minnesota in 2016, though.
Huh?
He almost won Minnesota in 2016.
2016.
It was extremely close.
It's like it hasn't it voted blue since Jimmy Carter?
It has, but it was very close in 2016. He almost won the state. It was within a couple points.
2%.
Yeah.
For Clinton. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So I mean that's a bit of a stretch goal, but I mean, maybe if he picks Mike Lindell to be his vice president, maybe Minnesota will come with him, Micah.
I mean, look at the 2020 results. I think we should include polls.
Yeah, I use, for those listening, I mean, the best source on polling aggregation, at least that I know of, is 538, their politics polls, and then Real Clear Politics. Just those are the two best sources that I've used, but I don't know. Do you have any alternative suggestions, Micah?
Biden won by over 8 points last time.
Well, there's a big swing in Minnesota, that's true. Again, I think Minnesota's a stretch goal for him, but he did almost win in 2016. In Minnesota, that is. But I mean, to be fair, like in 2016, the results are, I mean, it's hard to say how replicable the results in 2016 are, because it was pretty bizarre that he won the entire Rust Belt in the first place, and also Florida. He didn't win Virginia, but he won the whole Rust Belt and Florida. You know, Florida, historically competitive states, had kind of become more solid red at this point, more tilt red. And then the Rust Belt, I mean, the Rust Belt was, decently Democratic from, you know, Bush through Obama, right? And then he ends up winning every single state. So, and then Biden ends up eating into that. I mean, the only red Rust Belt state that Trump won in 2020 was Ohio, right? I think Joe Biden won all the other ones. So, transitioning to the general election a little bit here, I mean, it seems like a lot of those economic headwinds are materializing. Consumer sentiment seems to be ticking up. People seem to be kind of realizing their wage increases and, you know, tight labor market benefits and stuff like that. Obviously, inflation's been depressed for, you know, pretty much. I mean, been on a downward spin for the last year, essentially. Is there, from your perspective, like, what's the biggest threat that Trump has? You know, like, how can Trump win this race in your view? Obviously, you think Biden's going to win. I think Biden's going to win. But what? How do you think Trump can win? What are the odds?
I mean, I think there's a very good chance Trump wins. I think there's like a 45% chance at this point. I mean, what he needs is he needs Biden to keep bleeding with the left. Like, you know, if this election is about Biden's foreign policy for 10% of people, Biden just loses because he's just going to bleed too many voters. And if Trump can just be normal and just not talk, I think the best thing he could possibly do for his chances are go into a basement and just shut his mouth. Because, you know, a lot of independent moderate voters default to whoever's running against the incumbent because they're upset. But I don't think he's going to do those things. I don't think either of those things are going to happen. I think foreign policy is going to fade out as a lot of the interesting stuff goes away. And I think Trump will continue to say absolutely deranged stuff that will scare just enough voters to make sure that we win in November.
Here's an interesting question. If Trump came out and said, from the river to the sea, pro-Palestine, do you think the GOP would immediately become pro-Palestine and anti-Israel? How do you think the polling would shift?
I think they would shift a lot.
Like by like 20 plus, like, do you think they would be net favorable to Palestine in the conflict if Trump did that?
Like, I don't think you'd ever see a situation where they're like super pro-Palestine. What I do think is that they would completely defend everything he said, at least the vast majority, the ones that aren't in swing districts.
Wouldn't that be funny to see like fucking Lindsey Graham on MSNBC being like, well, listen, the Palestinian people have been oppressed for a long time. And, you know,
I don't think Lindsey Graham would ever say that. But what I think they would do is say, like, I'm very critical of how the Biden administration has pushed this kind of policy. Look at all these people that are dying because of the failure of the Biden administration. And like,
dude,
it's just like what they're going to do with, it's like what they do with Ukraine, right? So like a lot of the GOP members don't want to say, oh, I'm actually anti-funding Ukraine. What they will say is, well, I just think that we need accountability measures and look at all this money that's been wasted and look at how corrupt Ukraine is, yada, yada, yada.
Well, that's kind of my point. Like if Trump really does have that really strong, because I've seen polling to the effect of like the Trump supporters are more passionate than Biden supporters, right? And when we think about that, like, is it really the best strategy for Trump to just kind of, no, like, just play the moderate, just be quiet, like, don't go out and do anything too crazy? Like, if that's what his base wants, and his base is so responsive to what he's saying, I mean, it was a turnout race in 2020, and 74 million people voted for him, right? Like, that's a huge amount of turnout. That's record turnout on both sides. Most votes in presidential history, Biden, second most Trump in 2020. Like, would it really be a strong strategy for Trump to kind of tone it down, or is toning it up really the way that he drives turnout?
So I think that people underestimate the rigidity of Trump's cult of personality. I don't see a situation where you get like Vivek and people like that going after him and being able to make a credible case to Trump supporters whose like whole identity is that Trump's under attack, that like Trump is part of the deep state, especially since Trump's going to be like in court. Right. So Trump is going to be able to toe a line that is radical enough and like, you know, conspiratorial enough to keep these lunatics in check while like being able to not be an absolute insane person. But thankfully for our country, he will continue to be an absolute insane person because that's just such, that's so integrated. It's such a deep part of who he is.
Yeah. Trump's just fucking crazy. I mean, look, I agree. Like, obviously, I don't really see a world where Trump like tones it down. It seems like insofar as Trump tones it down, that's just like genuinely what he is. I mean, the truth is on some issues, Trump isn't like, it's clear that on some issues, Trump really isn't quite as radical as his base, right? Like Trump doesn't appear to be like quite as anti-gay as his base. He's probably just as anti-trans. And he's also, it's also seemingly clear he's not quite as anti-abortion as many of the people in the Republican Party. Like, he's kind of towed that line of like, well, you know, Roe v. Wade was terrible, disastrous decision. We got away from it. We got away from it because of me. But obviously, we shouldn't just, you know, force everyone to have birth all the time and, you know, got to have some exceptions. And that's kind of the line that he's towed. But that's also probably that's decently in line with his previous rhetoric on the topic, right? But I don't really know how much that helps him.
I think you know, Trump is clearly extremely dangerous because he just has such a viewpoints and so many issues that are so out of lockstep with the evidence or any thoughtful consideration whatsoever, like proposing that we eject ourselves from NATO. That would be disastrous. I mean, he killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was an awful decision. And he also has no respect for our institutions. It's not that he's always radical on every cultural issue.
Right.
But it is that he is totally willing to do the most radical, authoritarian, incredibly morally reprehensible things if it helps him. He's not an ideologue always, but he is a narcissist.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, how, to the degree that, because it seems like a wedge issue for Democrats for the last basically 2.5 years has been abortion, you know, Roe v. Wade getting overturned in 2021. And then it seems like subsequently Democrats have kind of outperformed significantly in all these elections. But like, if the one issue where Trump's pretty moderate on is abortion, you know, does the abortion issue stickiness, does that really affect Trump headed into the general election as much as somebody like Ron DeSantis? Or because Ron DeSantis literally signed an abortion ban, right? And, you know, things like this, right?
But I think that, like, we've seen that people, their association with Roe v. Wade and it being overturned with Republicans is really strong. Trump has already put out so many bad quotes on this where he's like, I overturned Roe v. Wade. I'm the guy who did it. That I absolutely think you can litigate that case, especially in swing states like Arizona, where abortion is going to be on the ballot and the Republican parties are going to be fighting to ban it. So I think that it's going to be, you know, the Republican Party doesn't do themselves any favors on these issues. They choose radicalism over doing what's popular pretty much every single time.
Yeah, it was funny to listen to Ron DeSantis like squirm his way out of like, hey, Governor, you signed a 6-week abortion ban. What's to make us think you won't do the same exact shit when you're president? He's like, well, look, I think it's a states' rights issue. And we did a 6, you know, whatever. I mean, Trump is going, it's bad. Trump's going to prison and Haley, whatever, her daughter's on TikTok. And it's like, oh, my God, like these Republicans are seriously trying to have their cake and eat it, too, on this abortion issue. And to be fair, that's one thing that. Like with Trump, I do wonder the staying power of that kind of issue, because Trump seems decently willing to disagree with his own base on certain issues. Like it was during the town hall that was in conjunction with Ron DeSantis and Haley, where that lady was like, are you willing to protect life in all circumstances? Which is like, hey, are you willing to just always force people to give birth under every single circumstance with no, like, 12-year-old gets raped by her dad, gets pregnant, do we force her to have that child? You know, your answer to that should be yes if you're like a radical, you know, anti-abortion person. And then he's like, well, no, like, look, you've got to have exceptions, right, to that issue, right? Not quite like McCain saying Obama is a good man and he's not a Muslim Arab or something, like in 2008, like that good clip, but you know, a little something like that. We'll see how it plays out. But yeah, pretty much, I mean, our summation of the race, it's Trump's obviously going to win the primary. Micah and I are of the same view that if he goes to prison, or if not goes to prison, but if he gets like convicted of anything, honestly, I don't think that'll affect the GOP nomination. I do think it'll probably affect the general election. So I think there's some decently positive headwinds. I think that, however, on the cases, it's just, I don't know if anything's going to be settled by the time the election comes around, right? Because that stuff always takes so long. You know, it's hard to say if any of those cases will actually come to trial or come to a conviction before November, right?
I mean, I imagine, like, there's so many cases against them. I imagine, like, maybe some will, but I don't imagine any of the major indictments will. He's going to be in court all the time. He's going to be muzzled on live television. And I think, you know, if you're a strong man, the last thing you want to do is look weak, and he will look weak. Now, you know, you could say, well, he looks like the victim. I think everybody that's going to look at that and consider him the victim is already on board with Trump. I think swing voters, you know, we could say, remember how fatigued you were by Trump always being in drama and always causing strife. Well, imagine now this guy's literally like in a criminal trial. He's in multiple criminal trials. Like, do you really want this? And I think that's an effective argument. I hope it is for the sake of our country.
Most independents see a guy on trial and they're probably not like, wow, this man is being persecuted, right? It's probably like, oh, this guy, he probably up to no good, you know? At least that's, to be fair, that's reflective in the polling. I mean, I saw a poll that just said that it was like, how are you going to vote? And then it was like, how are you going to vote if there's a conviction of Trump? And the swing was literally 15 or 20 points. It was like Biden goes from a -5 to a +10. Like, holy shit, you know, and that's a pretty wild swing, which just tells me that, you know, most independents still take the court process, you know, decently seriously. So it seems like the erosion of faith in our court process is only affecting the Republican brain.
Slower than expected.
yeah, well, I mean, that's good news, I guess, right? Like, it's like, oh, it's only 40% of our country that's really wilding out, not, you know, 50%, I guess, is basically what I'm saying. But anyway, whatever. Well, that's our analysis. We're still bullish on Biden in 2024, and we're also bullish on Trump winning the nomination. Probably just be a rematch between the two, barring any sort of tragic, you know, health episode or something between either candidate. We're looking at a Trump Biden rematch with some sort of sleeper vice presidential pick on Trump's side. Is it going to be Lee Zeldin? Is it going to be Kristi Noem? Who knows?